everyone, I'm Lois Vargas, and you're listening to episode 34 of the Art Scene Podcast. Today's guest is Susie Cantor, Associate Curator of Visual Arts at the YBCA, Yerba Buena Center for the Arts. In a bit, you'll hear us discuss her background and how she came to be interested in a career in the arts, and then we'll talk about Bay Area Now 8, the current exhibition at the YBCA. Before I play our conversation, let me tell you about a couple events here in the Bay Area. First, there's a new exhibition at Cobble Books and Video titled Life is a Highway. The show features new work by Brianne Trammell and Mary Bonas. Life is a Highway is an evolving suite of printed ephemera, physical evidence for the thoughts and conversations we are and aren't having in America. The show opens Thursday, November 29th from 6 to 8 p.m. With the holidays coming around the corner, you can get a head start on shopping for gifts by going to the Editions Holiday Pop-Up Shop on December 1st at the Minnesota Street Project. The pop-up will feature a mix of handmade collectibles and functional items from sculptures and exclusive prints to artist-designed apparel and homeware. Lastly, over at the De Young Museum, there's a new featured exhibition titled Painting is My Everything, art from India's Mithila region featuring 17 contemporary artists, many of whom are women, who employ centuries-old regional styles to express personal experiences and viewpoints. The show will be open through December 30th, 2018. I did have one more announcement to make. Over at Royal Nonsuch Gallery, former guest of the podcast Stephanie Rolfs is in a collaborative two-person exhibition titled You're Weird for Building This. Inspired by animal enrichment devices, the objects provided by zookeepers and pet owners to reduce stress and improve an animal's quality of life, the artists present enrichment devices for human audiences. The show will be open through December 2nd. The gallery hours are Saturday and Sunday from 1 to 4 p.m. or by appointment. All right, now here's my conversation with Susie. Again.
Yeah, it's good to see you as well.
It's good to be back here in the YBCA.
In the admin offices.
In the admin, yeah, behind the scenes, not just looking from afar from the galleries. So it's crazy because when I come here, it does feel like home because I spent so much time as the intern, intern here.
2 years?
Yeah, I think it was like 2 years. Yeah, which is a long time.
But. Yeah, long time ago now. It feels like that was when I first started, which I think back on that.
Yeah, I literally started interning 2 months before you started.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And then I was in charge of you and I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I just started here.
Yeah. And you came from the Asian Art Museum at that time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember just having a curatorial assistant telling me what to do. And then the next week she was gone. And then 2 months later you came along.
And then there was me. And like, was you. I don't know.
Yeah. And now you're the associate curator here.
Associate curator.
Which is great.
Yeah. A little over five years I've been here.
So. Yeah. Congrats on that, by the way, because that's also kind of recent, right?
Still? Yeah, that was in April.
Yeah.
Still moving around and all over the org, and I was promoted, which was really exciting.
Yeah.
That's never happened before.
So before the Asian, where were you at? I mean, first of all, you're from, I remember you tell me one time you are from San Francisco,
yes.
Right?
I am a local. I mean, which people tell me is rare. And then I'm like, well, I don't know. I hang out with a lot of people who are from here. My high school friends. I grew up here. I moved away when I went to college and then moved back here, oh gosh, like 9 years ago. It was 2009. I moved back here in 2009. So yeah, so I've been back here for a while. And then when I first moved back here, I was just kind of figuring stuff out. And then I worked at the Asian Art Museum for 3.5 years. My title was assistant to the chief curator, but I joked that I had like 12 kids. It was managing the curatorial department, reminding them to submit their like timesheets and do their travel, but then also working on all the exhibitions. And then I started here just over 5 years ago.
Well, before the Asian, like what did you, so you went, where did you go to school? Like, so you went to high school here in the city,
went
right?
To high school here in the city.
Where did you end up going to college?
I went to Wellesley College, which was great, which is not, it's funny because people are like, what was it like going to a women's college?
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the all women's college, right?
It is, yeah. And I hope it never goes co-ed. I actually firmly believe in that. It was great. It's not for everyone, but I think it was a really amazing and valuable experience. And that was where I first started studying art history. And like even today, there's it's an amazing network. It's actually a really, really like very human, very warm, very like giving network.
Were you always planning on studying art history when you went there? Or?
No, I had no idea what I wanted to study. I took like the Art 100 class first semester and Art 101 second semester. And I was like, oh, I like this. I'll just continue with it. But then I think back on it and like traveling with my parents as a kid, I always loved going to museums and like just trying to like learn little things that I could. So it's not that surprising. And then I also majored in political science. So when I first graduated from college, I worked in a law firm for 3 years.
No way.
Yep.
Well, so are your parents lawyers or something? Or like, no? So what do they do for a living? That like?
My dad's a doctor, or he was a doctor. He's retired, and my mom doesn't work. So
where did the political science come in?
I took classes. I took like the intro to political science. Yeah. I was like, I like this.
Yeah.
And I really, really liked American politics. So like learning about the Constitution, learning about the way the government works, which is, so when I graduated college, I was like, I don't know what I want to do. And one of my friends was like, come move to LA and live with me. I was like, okay, that sounds great. It's summers in San Francisco and winters in Massachusetts. I was really ready for Southern California.
Yeah.
So I just applied to random jobs.
And this is straight out of Wellesley.
This is straight out of Wellesley. So I moved to LA, then worked in the law firm for 3 years, and then moved to New York, when was that? 2005 for graduate school. So I went to NYU's graduate program in art history, the Institute of Fine Arts, where I studied 17th century Dutch painting.
Well, and by the way, so while you're working at this law firm for 3 years, has the thought of you working at an art museum even like trickling in your mind, or like was that not in your like in your mindset yet?
It was kind of, I think, in the back of my head. Like when I moved to LA, I looked for art jobs and I looked for law-related jobs, and it was just kind of where I landed. It was a really small law firm. It was a father and son, and then both of their wives. So it was three lawyers, and then the mom was the like billing person, and I'm still very close to them. So that was like, they joke, they're like, we ruined you. This is the best job you'll ever have. Like they took me, like paid for lunch every day, and they would just be like, let's go shopping or like do this. So like they spoiled me, but I worked really hard for them.
Yeah.
So it was a great experience. I'm really glad I did that, and I have a much better understanding of like estate planning than I would have otherwise, which is really important.
Right.
But I kind of was like, you know, I don't know if this is what I want to do, and had the back of my mind thinking about art, and then just applied to graduate school.
And what made you go to New York? Because of the grad school you got into?
Yeah. So I would apply to, I can't even remember where all I applied now. It's a million years ago, it feels like. And I think that was my first choice. I think the Institute of Fine Arts was my first choice. It's a really well-respected program. It's very much Ivory Tower. It's very... Yeah. Very Ivory Tower. So I have, you know, I'm glad I did it. I think I learned a lot. I met a lot of really great people. I think it's really interesting when I see a lot of people coming out of SFAI and CCA here, and I see some of the professors, and, you know, we have CCA residents now and Jim Voorhees, and they're these really amazing people who are committed to teaching.
Sure.
And it's just a very different experience from much more traditional academia, and I wish I had maybe...
Yeah.
Known more about these other things. I did the very traditional art history route rather than the like curatorial studies or museum studies route. And that's just, it's a whole different ballgame.
Did you, because you ended up coming back here, I mean, did you try and work at any institutions there in New York?
Yeah, in graduate school, I worked for a woman who was a consultant. That was my very, very first art job. And she was really interesting because she had programs like at Memorial Sloan Kettering, and when they were reopening the ballpark, the new one for the Mets, City Field, she was doing some public art there, so she did stuff like that. Public art, but then also a lot of private collections.
Yeah.
Like, she was Mayor Bloomberg's private advisor. Oh, she had Michael Eisner. I was like, I'm just remembering all these things, like, and then just other random people. So it was really interesting just learning how people put together their private collections and then starting to write texts. And then once I finished graduate school, I worked in a gallery for 2 years, which was interesting and funny, and I'm still really close to two of my former coworkers, and we just, every time we see each other, we just laugh about the crazy stuff we had to do. But I got to travel for that job, so we did a lot of the art fairs, and that was, I'm glad I did it. I'm glad I did the commercial side just to see, but I always kind of wanted to work in a museum. So when I moved back here, that was what I was aiming for, and then the job.
What did the museum appeal more to you than working in the gallery?
Well, the gallery I worked in is just so weird.
Yeah.
When I think back on it, it was just like a bunch of just a really funny cast of characters. But I think, you know, you're driven by different means when you're in a gallery. It's not that they're not committed to the art, they are, but there's also the financial aspect that they're is driving what they're doing, versus in a museum, it's more or the nonprofit side, it's much more about the research or what you're doing, and something that's mission-driven, basically. So
sure.
I think that was what I kind of, not having worked in it yet, thought that I wanted to try it. And then once I started working in the museum world, I was like, this is what I prefer.
Yeah.
It's less, doesn't pay as well, but
yeah.
I was like, how can I phrase this? It doesn't pay as well, but I think I much prefer to be on this side of things, and it's,
yeah.
It's like the one and a half dozen of the other, but.
So then when, well, because I'm curious, because you said you studied 17th century Dutch painting. Mm-hmm. Okay. So when you did that, did you have this, like, idea that you were going to be a curator or specialist in, like, 17th century Dutch painting?
Yeah, that was what I wanted. And, you know, when I started my program, like, most people were interested in contemporary art, and that's when, oh, gosh, I can see his face. Oh, Rob Storr was there teaching. Jeffrey Weiss was there, Linda Nochlin, like, all these really famous people. And I was like, this isn't what I want, and I totally resisted it. I really wish I'd sat in on one of Linda Nochlin's classes, but I didn't. They were very popular. It's hard to get into, but I just really resisted it. So it's funny that I like I laugh to myself sometimes, thinking like, "Oh, I'm in contemporary art. I tried so hard not to do this. I really, really loved, and I still do love what I initially studied. And I'm actually really glad that I studied something else, because to have that background is really, I think, important. There are sometimes I'm like, "Oh, I missed some things in like the contemporary world that I didn't study," but. Sure. Yeah, I always kind of thought that I would stay in Old Masters. That was my thing. It didn't happen.
Was the gallery you worked at an Old Masters gallery?
It was mostly focused on Old Masters. There's some contemporary. They run the estate of Ray Johnson, but it's mostly Old Masters.
Yeah.
Well, my boss, he'd been doing it for like 50 years. When he started out, he was contemporary, and then like slowly moved back.
Well, what's the type of place that they would have you travel for a job like that?
So I went to Maastricht in the Netherlands for the European Fine Art Fair, which is like the big, like famous, fancy, impossibly long art fair. It's like 10 days long, which for an art fair, when you're working it, you're so dead at the end. But it was fun. You know, I get to go to like live in Europe for 3 weeks and, see a lot of people, and that's like the art there is amazing. So I would just go around in the mornings and look at all the other booths, because it was like, you know, it's mostly Old Masters, some contemporary modern, but at the time, it was perfect, and I really loved it. We also did Art Basel in Basel, but I didn't go to that one. And then we would do some of the New York art fairs. But
I think
for that job, I only traveled to Maastricht. But it was fun.
Is that a type of job, like, working? Because I've heard other people talk with who worked at galleries, and then they say they wear many hats, right, at these places. Was that kind of the same situation with you? Where, like, other than just flying to places and running the art fairs booths, did you do anything else?
Yeah, I mean, we had exhibitions in the gallery, and then my former boss has this extensive private collection, which is really amazing. So I had to deal with a lot of people wanting loans, tours. What else? I'm like, what else did I do? This was so long ago. But mostly it was like client follow-up and sending things, and he would sell a lot of stuff to museums, so we interfaced with a lot of museums as well, which was, I always liked that, which, again, should have been the signal. I was like, oh, I really like working with these guys. But I feel like it's funny. Like, I feel like I wear way more hats here.
Yeah.
That's more, I would say this job and this role, much more so than that, than in the gallery. It was much more, I was going to say 9 to 5, it was 10 to 6. Much more 10 to 6 and half days on Fridays in August.
That must be nice.
Oh, yeah. It's very New York.
Well, like, and so now you leave the gallery after 2 years. Mm-hmm. Did you try to go like somewhere like the MoMA or anything like that, museum-wise?
No, that was when I moved back here. And so,
what motivated that move back?
My dad was sick at the time, and it was like, okay, it's time to move back. I was like, I don't really know about this job anymore.
Be close to family.
It's hard being across the country, and like my roommates, the lease was kind of ending. It was like, it just felt like time. Of course, it was 2009, so it was actually not the best time to move. Like, just quit your job.
Right.
In hindsight,
little
I was like,
did you know.
Well, one of my roommates in New York worked for Lehman Brothers, so that whole thing happened. He kept his job and he worked for Barclays, but it was an intense time. But then it's funny because I didn't feel like I personally felt the effects of the financial effects of 2008 until I started working in the museum world, which was a couple years later and across the country.
Yeah.
Whereas I was in New York when it all happened, but, you know, working in a gallery didn't affect the same way, whereas when I started working in the Asian Art Museum, they still had, I think we weren't being paid for holidays, and there was no wage increases, and it was all due to like everything that had happened in 2008. And so I moved back here and then traveled a little bit because I could, and then focused on the job search and got the job at the Asian a few months later. So
did you do that thinking that, oh, maybe the Asian art world is the, the world, or do you kind of did it at this point where you're kind of like, I just need a job and it needs to be in a museum?
Yeah, I mean, I was really hoping for a museum job. I mean, since it was more administrative, it wasn't totally what I wanted to do, but I also hadn't gotten my foot in the door in a museum, and that can be really hard, as you know.
Yeah.
So I was excited for the prospect. It was still in the curatorial department, and I got to know the curators really well, and I learned a lot about Asian art. No expert by any means, but you learn being there. And that's what I loved about it at first, that it was something new and I was constantly learning. And then after 3.5 years, it felt a little less. Like, I was learning all the time, so I was kind of like, what is next?
Yeah.
I can't keep doing this. And then this position opened up here.
Well, did you, when you're doing that, like, so, like, even going back all the way to New York, when you're working in that gallery, like, are you thinking already what type of job? Like, obviously you wanted to work in museums, but what did you already know you wanted to go the curatorial route? Did you have an idea of a different type of job? Because I think one of the things a lot of people that I, even like younger students coming out of like undergrad don't understand is there's so many jobs
there's
other
so
than just
jobs.
The typical curatorial positions, right? Like, so for someone like you who, you know, originally you majored in both like art history and political science. You worked at a law firm. Like, obviously,
I'm all over.
Yeah. Like, you were dipping your toe a little bit in the law legal world to see maybe this is a thing you want.
I still have moments sometimes like, should I have gone that route?
And then you even like went to grad school and you even dipped yourself into the commercial art world and you were like, this is still not for me. So at one point were you deciding like, you know what? Like, I don't want the admin role. I don't want the commercial art gallery role. I want to be a curator.
I would say that's a good question. It's a tough one because I've always had trouble even saying that's what I wanted to do. And and even though this is the job I've been doing has been curatorial for 5 years, it wasn't really until I got the title change and actually had the curator title like 3 months ago or 4 months ago that I was like, okay, I can actually call myself a curator now. And that's been really like, it's hard. It's like, it's such a weird world and there's so many barriers. There's so many people who want to do it. There's so much hierarchy as we're talking about. There's so many things that it's like, I think it was really scary to admit that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
And even, so I think I wanted it, but I wouldn't have been able to articulate it necessarily. Yeah. And so it was kind of like slowly, just kind of like little baby steps. Like in the gallery, it was, you know, sort of curatorial, sort of administrative, and then the Asian Art Museum was in the curatorial department, but more administrative. I got to do a little bit of like curatorial stuff and exhibition management. It was kind of a mix of all. I worked really closely with the museum services department, so like the registrars and the preparators and the conservators, and then also my department. And then I think it must have been some point in that job where it was like, I can do the administrative stuff. I can do it really well and, you know, work really well with a lot of people, but this isn't what's motivating me.
Yeah.
And it was, I think, when I got kind of towards the end of my rope at that job, just feeling frustrated with what I was doing and always doing the same thing and not feeling that there's opportunities for growth, that that's when I was able to kind of admit, no, I want to do the curatorial route. And then this job opened up and I was able to, like, here's, you know, no chance I'm going to get this, but let me apply. And then even when they offered me the job when I came here for my first day, I was like, are they going to tell me that they didn't mean to hire me? They thought I was someone else. No, that didn't happen.
Well, and so let's go back to that because then that's where our paths cross, right? So like, as I mentioned before, like there's a different curatorial assistant. And she actually left to go work in publishing.
Yeah, I talked to her briefly on Friday night about that.
and here you come into the position.
Yeah.
You're looking for something different, something better than what you were at. And not that you didn't appreciate the experience.
And it got me here,
and got
which I'm
you
grateful
here.
For.
Right, but you wanted something more, right?
Yeah.
And so now you're here, and this whole time we're talking about your background originally is like 17th century Dutch painting. What made you come to a place like the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts, which is the work is a lot, the stuff it's they is more contemporary.
All contemporary.
and community-based, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny, when we had the Public Intimacy exhibition that we did with SF MoMA 4 years ago, people were talking about the historical art being from the 1950s, and I was like, what? That's not historical? That's like, okay, we're coming from different perspectives.
Yeah.
You know, it's as you're talking, it just made me think, like, one of the things I tell people is, like, even if you don't know, or even if you do know you want the curatorial path, or you want a certain in any industry, like, sometimes you have to take the job that you're not sure about or that isn't exactly what you want to do, to get to where you want to go. And I think I looked at the Asian Art Museum job in that way when I took it. It was like, I want to work in museums. I haven't done this before. This is a good opportunity. I'll be in the curatorial department. I can actually kind of get to learn things and see where it goes. And I thought I'd be there for like a year or two. And of course, you know, this industry, you stay longer
because
things don't open up or it's really hard. And, you know, I really enjoyed it for the first couple of years. And it was just, But that job, one, helped me get here, but also helped me see that this is what I wanted to do. The things that I got to work on a little bit more, because the curators in the department were really wonderful and took me under their wing and tried to help me, the ones I ended up working on the most ended up being contemporary shows.
Sure.
Particularly the curator of contemporary art at the time, Allison Harding, and one of the curators who's still there, she's a curator of South Asian art, Kamar Adamji, they both like really let me do stuff, and it, you know, it helped them as well, because none of them have curatorial assistants, which is crazy.
That is crazy.
The Korean department has a curatorial assistant. I don't know why the rest don't. And I was like, oh, I actually really like doing this. And we had a big contemporary show with, I forgot how many artists now, around 30 artists. And it was like the big, like, we're doing contemporary art now, the Asian Art Museum. And I got to work a lot on that show, and I really enjoyed it. And I enjoyed working with the artists, and I enjoyed, like, looking at, just thinking about contemporary art and what artists are doing today. So when this job opened up, it was like, you know, it's interesting that the things that have interested me the most were the contemporary things. So here's this opportunity. Let me see where this goes. And then I think back on it now, and I still love 17th century Dutch art. I will see it whenever I can. The Rijksmuseum is my favorite museum in the world in Amsterdam. But the thought of actually going back to doing those shows that, you know, maybe you work on for 3 or 4 years, and it's all this in-depth research, and it's very, like, minute details, that isn't as exciting to me as working with artists and helping them realize their visions and, you know, doing the community-based work and, you know, just with Barry and Owie, which is open, just that chance to work with so many artists so closely was so amazing and so valuable that I really love where I am. And I would, like, again, 10 years ago, me would have been like, what are you talking about? That's just nuts. Like, no way. But I think I ended up in the right place. And again, like to what I was saying earlier about, you know, you kind of have to take the opportunities that come across your path, because you don't know where they'll go. You don't know who you'll meet or what will happen. And I think the more people can keep an open mind, that's how you get places.
Sure.
And that's, you know, that's what I tell people who I talk to who are younger and, you know, asking for career advice. I'm like, I don't know what else to tell you. Cause I'm like, do I have a career? Oh yeah. Okay. Let me see. Let me put it together. Yeah, yeah. Maybe.
Yeah. I think even now I work at a bigger institution that, as I meet more people, I don't think everybody has the straightforward trajectory as I thought one would have if you're in the museum world, you know, and I was preached about, oh, there's these steps that you have to take to get to where you're at.
Yeah.
And then when I'm there, I figured out that, like, nobody had that path.
Yeah.
Like, everybody kind of bounced around until they found what they wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why it's important to explore. And, like, to your point about what I want, I think I knew about curatorial, but I also was sort of interested in registration and exhibition management, and that's one of the great things about this job is because our department isn't it's curatorial and production all together. It's not as in a larger institution or a larger museum, they're separate departments, but here we're one, and we, I think, overlap more, and then you get to learn more and do more of those things.
Yeah.
So,
and it's not even a collecting institution.
Yeah.
So, like, you don't deal with a lot of that type of stuff, like the collection management stuff as much.
No, but we deal with all loans because
we
don't have a collection. So,
right.
but we're multidisciplinary, so we're constantly, you know, you work in a museum, so everyone understands museum practices, whereas here people are coming from really different backgrounds still within the arts, but they don't understand museum practices, and we're constantly saying, like, no, you can't have food in the galleries because that's how we get loans, and if we have food and all these things, and it's just a really different set of challenges, collecting versus non-collecting, and multidisciplinary versus museum. And
right. Well, the Bill T. Jones that was here reminds me of that.
I love that one so much.
That was a great show.
It's a great show.
But, like, I think one of the things he had put on exhibit was, you know, Bill T. Jones, who had done performance dance, and it, like, you know, turns out that some of his backdrop pieces were actually painted by Keith Haring,
there were so many people in that, so many great people in that exhibition of his backdrops who have all since passed away because the 80s in New York.
Right.
That show, I'm glad you mentioned it. I love that show so much. And it was only up for like 6 weeks. It was one of the few times I think we've really, really done as an institution the cross-disciplinary thing really well because he's a choreographer and dancer, but was so much a part of the downtown New York, like, visual arts scene, and, like, there were all these backdrops and different aspects of his practice that we were able to do a museum show or an exhibition about it. And there were the performances, and then we screened the documentaries, and there was, like, all these things, and it was really great. And it was only up for 6 weeks, but...
And I remember when you guys brought in that that tarp, but it was like the back of the Keith Haring painted.
Yeah.
And you guys were shocked because it was like rolled up and it was just like stored in the, somewhere in like a basement or something like that.
Totally. Yeah. Oh, I forgot about that. And then we had those like cinder block bricks. I was just talking about that the other day. They were in the grand lobby, and every time there was an event, we had to move them. Yeah. So it was like I don't know, like 30 cinder block bricks that had to, or 60 that had to be moved like every couple of weeks. Yeah. That we were gonna like kill someone.
So then, you know, when I remember when you came here, you know, now you work under a different visual arts director slash head curator, right? For all intents and purposes, right? And back then it was Betty Sue Hertz. Mm-hmm. And so I've always been curious because she hires you.
Yeah.
There's probably a different direction, right? A different like vision, right? That she has, and you're kind of working under her, working under that. She moves on. You have a new person. How was that transition? Because like most people, I mean, that I know would kind of like, if they got hired by this one curator, they would like leave as well, find somewhere else to go work. But you stayed on.
Yeah.
And she kept you on, and you have been promoted under her, and you work well, obviously, with her as well. So how did that work out?
It's funny. I feel like I've had how many jobs here? At least 3 different jobs here because, you know, like you say, I was hired by Betty Sue Hertz, and that was the first like year and a half or so I was here. And then there was a year interim period between Betty Sue left and Lucia, my current boss, was hired. And actually it was in that interim period where I talked to Dorothy, who was our interim director of the department. She was already in the department. And I think I passed her a little piece of paper that was like, I want to curate shows. And it was like, I couldn't even say it out loud. And then I got to do my first shows that way. So, learn to ask what you want, but take the opportunities again. But also that it was that weird interim period where I took on a lot more than I had been doing. So when the Lucia started, I think, you know, she already saw me in a slightly different position than Betty Sue had, just because, you know, when I started with Betty Sue, it was a much more traditional curatorial assistant position, which, you know, as it should be, and that's what I was hired for. But I was able to step up in that interim period. So when Lucia started and she got to know the department, she kind of figured out where we best fit and what we could do. And I think pretty early on, I'm trying to remember now, assigned me to work on the Tania Bruguera exhibition with her. We traveled to Cuba together, which...
I heard about that. How was that trip?
It was really great. It was so hot.
Yeah.
But I remember being like on my way there, and I stopped in Mexico City, where she lives part-time, and we flew from there and stayed with her, and I was like, oh no, I'm heading to this island where I won't have internet access, and I'm hanging out with my boss and an artist for a week. Like, will I survive? And it was amazing, of course. Yeah. But I had that moment of panic of like, oh, what is this going to be like?
Yeah, you know, it's funny you mentioned that, because when I saw, you know, as we all know, things through Instagram, right? And I saw that on Instagram that you were on that trip, I was like, oh my God, she's made it. She's traveling with the curator, like, to different places.
To Cuba, of all places.
Yeah, because like for me, being just an intern who was aspiring to work in the curatorial department and watching, you know, I'm always watching like the people above me, right? Because I want to see what are they doing to get where they're at. And I remember seeing you, and you were, when I was here, you were the traditional curatorial assistant where you kind of did some admin stuff, some curatorial research, but you didn't really travel. You didn't really curate anything.
No.
Maybe help with wall text or something.
Did a lot of that.
Yeah. And so then I remember... I remember seeing that you were traveling with the new curator, like, over to Cuba and doing research and meeting all these people. And I was like, that's great. Like
that's so funny to hear that. I love that. That was, I think, the very first, like, business trip I took for this institution. I was like, it's so great. I'm like, first time I traveled to this institution, I'm going to Cuba, of all places, which was great. We stayed in the same building as Tanya's mom and our own little Airbnbs. And basically, it's actually a really good way to hash out an exhibition, because we didn't have the distraction of the internet or phone. So we would just talk for like 3 hours, break, have lunch, and then talk for some more. And like, we had her focus, because Tanya's always in a million places at once, so getting her to focus can be hard. That reminds me, I need to hound her for something. That show is traveling, so I'll actually be going to Dublin next year, because it travels there. It's in Mexico City now, and we went for the opening there. And, but yeah, back to your question, it's just been, I think Lucia, and we were all like, oh no, what if she comes in and wants to fire us all?
But, you know, right.
I think we've worked together for a very long time now. I mean, I've been here 5 years. Martin, and well, Martin's actually now in a different department. Rebecca and John have been here maybe 7 years or something like that. Elena, the same thing. Dorothy has been here almost 5 years. Tessa now has been here 4 years, I think. So we're really cohesive as a team, and I think, and Lucia said this, that, you know, she's so lucky that she came into that and was able to just work within, and I think she understood that we work together as a team, and we could support her in the way that she wanted to be supported. And you know, every time at an opening, we're all drunk, and everyone's like, "I love you," and she's like, "I've inherited this amazing team." So I think we were lucky that she saw that, and was able to, you know, say, "Okay, this, I see these people's roles, and what do you want to do, and how can I grow you?" And I think she's really interested in that, in letting people do more of what they want to do, which is great. And yeah, she's been here almost 3 years now.
Yeah.
Man.
I know.
Wow.
A lot, so much has happened in that 5 years, especially for you career-wise. And now you're an associate curator.
Yay. Yeah.
Not assistant, an associate.
I know. We were asking for assistant, and then they bumped me up the next level. I think they realized that maybe it was a little past due. But no, I'm super grateful. That was amazing.
As associate curator, what are the responsibilities? At a place like the YBCA, like what comes now with, like, in terms of the types of shows that you do?
Well, it's interesting because I feel like it wasn't so much a change in the day-to-day. I think it's more reflective of the changes over the past 5 years. Like, if I look at what my job was when I was hired and I look at what my job is now, it's really different.
Right.
But it kind of happened incrementally. So I think the title change promotion recognizes that to a degree. So not so much has changed, but in the last couple of months, but I was already working on Bay Area Now 8 with Lucia and with Martin. And Lucia is really focusing on
and Martin, by the way, who I was mentioned it. So I've actually had Martin.
Martin's been on the
podcast
yeah.
before, who at that time was not in his current position as well. He's been recently promoted as well.
Yeah, and he's now in the public programs department, helping develop a brand new department, which is really exciting. I think he's sad to leave visual arts, but also it's I think a really, like, great and exciting opportunity for him to do this. Start a whole new department that we desperately need. So it's really exciting. So we don't have to do our own public programs. So we started working on the exhibition maybe a year ago. And the first, Lucia was, so Bay Area Now is, you know, our triennial. And Lucia has worked on other triennials, biennials, and was thinking, do we just redo the concept? Do we make it all the West Coast? Do we do the Pacific Northwest? Do we, like, interrogate the idea of what is a biennial? And then she eventually came back to, let's just go back to what Bay Area Now was at its inception, which was you go around, you have studio visits, and you select artists based on that, basically. All the things that we don't have time to do because we're constantly in rooms just like this, having meetings. So we've started by reaching out to people and asking for recommendations because, again, we're always in rooms like this and we're not out seeing artists as much as we should be or would like to be, and then started doing studio visits from there, and she really let me take the lead on that. So I was the one contacting people and then setting up the studio visits, and then we would go to most together. She didn't get to all of them. Martin was doing the same thing with architects and designers. And so I think maybe starting even a year ago, that was kind of where that, like, getting to take the lead on something. Really started with this exhibition, because we worked on the Tanya Bruguera exhibition together, but that was really, you know, I call it her baby. Because, you know, she and Tanya had been in talks for a while before Tanya agreed to do the exhibition, and I worked very closely with them on it. But I think this exhibition was really getting to do more of the legwork, and that was really exciting for me. Right now, I'm blissfully not working on anything at the moment, and still, like, recovering from the last few months, finishing up a book from the Future Farmers exhibition, and then traveling the Tanya Bruguera exhibition. So I think going forward, it'll be interesting to see. We have the Suzanne Lacy show next, which is we're doing with SF MoMA with Rudolph and Dominic there. So Lucia is working really closely with them.
Yeah, with SF MoMA. Right?
Yeah, so you maybe you'll get pulled into that at some point, if you like how the institution is. And she was, so part of her being able, letting me take the lead on Bay Area Now was that she could also then focus on the Suzanne Lacy stuff. Because, like what I was saying earlier about larger institutions, more traditional institutions where you plan for several years, we're like, how are they planning this exhibition already? We have, like, there's plenty of time, you know, they're like, we're behind. It's just, like, different ideologies right there, but it's good that they are actually focusing on it earlier because it's a huge retrospective across both institutions.
Right.
Our side focusing on more of the social practice or the socially engaged works, and SF MoMA focusing on the more traditional works. So I don't really have a good answer. I hope to be working on something soon. My brain is still like, wait, what am I doing next? I don't know. Right. And we just go here, and usually we open a show and we're behind on the next. There's rarely that time for a break. But Barry now is up for 6 months, and I'm actually like, oh, I can take a mental break for a little bit. And I have vacation coming up, which of course is like half taken over with like seeing Tonya Bergara in London and going to art fairs and going to Biennial. But then when I come back, I'll hopefully be like, okay, what am I working on next? I've had my like 2 weeks off. What's next?
Well, we started talking about Bay Area now, right? So I want to talk about that because you answered actually one of the questions I was going to ask you, which was about who took the lead on it. Mm-hmm. Because when I was here, the last Bay Area Now 7.
Which was actually 4 years ago, not three.
Right. And I was going to mention that because I was here. I was interning here when that happened.
Yeah.
And I got to see a little bit of the behind the scenes on that. That was set up a little bit differently.
It was a really different
one. Right. And I think it was the first one in a while that was set up differently than mm-hmm. the previous. Previous triennials. So I guess the first thing I wanted to ask you was, first talk about a little bit, give a little background of what Bay Area Now is. Yeah.
Bay Area Now is our triennial exhibition, which, as I said, was the last one was 4 years ago, but two of them were only 2 years apart, so we're actually on track from the beginning
right.
to have been every 3 years. I realized that. I did some math. I was very excited. So it started in 1997 with Renny Pritikin and Renee de Guzman and Arnold Kemp, who were the three original curators here in the visual arts at YBCA. And they wanted to, let me take actually a step back. YBCA doesn't have a good archive or institutional memory because people move in and out. We're multidisciplinary, all that stuff. So we had our... another intern, Kinjin Montoya, who's been with us for a while, and we tasked her with basically researching the history of the exhibition, which is great. That's if you saw that kind of big vinyl on the wall with like the history of all, the select history, that
right.
was all her work, and she wrote an essay for the brochure. So looking back at the history of the exhibition and interviewing all the previous curators and artists, not all the artists, some. It was important. Lucia had this idea that you really have to take a look back. Can go with her idea of like, do we reformat? No, let's go back to the beginning. So I actually know a lot about the exhibition over the years. But in 1997, so part of the research, Kinjin was interviewing all the previous curators. And one thing that Renny Pritikin said, who's the chief curator, which was really interesting, was that, they didn't, because it was a new organization we opened in 93, there wasn't really like a built-in constituency yet, so they wanted to build an exhibition that would bring in people and that would be something that was for the Bay Area, so mm-hmm. focusing on Bay Area artists, which I think is really important because there isn't a large group show like this otherwise else in the Bay Area. There's the Seeker right. show at SFMOMA, but it's much smaller and it's a really different process, and I think they complement each other, but...
Yeah,
because
that has like a judge and like they pick
yeah,
only
the
like
jury,
a certain...
Yeah, and I know the nominations just came out.
And they're only like in the certain galleries in this large building.
Yeah, and I think it was five in the last one last year. So it's a different show. I think they're often compared, but I think they're really... I like to think of them as complementary
sure.
rather than, in competition or so similar. But they're the two like well-known, bigger Bay Area art shows. So they were trying to build that... So it started in 97, and then, so this is the 8th edition, and they've kind of varied over the years. The initial one started out, they were kind of doing what we did, which is where we took the idea from, reaching out to the network, seeing who people recommended of artists to see, and then just doing tons and tons of studio visits and picking the artists that they felt were doing really interesting, important work, or, kind of groundbreaking work at the time. And they were also really committed to diversity, which I think is really important, also very important to YBCA, looking at artists of color, looking at women, and making sure it wasn't just, a group show of all white men.
Yeah.
And we, didn't explicitly say that in our text, but we definitely had that in mind thinking about this show and really wanting to broaden who gets represented in an
sure.
institution. And I think it was really inspiring to see that they were thinking that in 1997 as well, which is, the middle of all the identity politics and everything. And so each iteration has been slightly different. I think the first two or three were kind of following that same model. What's really interesting about what Kinjin's research was is she didn't just look at the institution, in the Bay Area, but also what was happening nationally, internationally. So you see like all these, our copy editor was looking at it and she's like, do you have any like happy events that you can put in? And I was like, well, we mentioned when Obama got elected and when he normalized relations with Cuba, but everything else is, you know, it's 9/11, it's Hurricane Katrina, and you see the world shifting. And what's really interesting is 99, it was, you have the Y2K fears, yeah. And then you also have Columbine. And I find that so heartbreaking to look at, that people are like, the thing that people were so afraid of was the internet, which, you know, people still are and should be, but that was like these first really big debates on gun control, and here we are, yeah. You know, nearly 20 years later and nothing has changed. Side note. But I think contextualizing the exhibition within the history of what was going on globally, nationally, not just locally, was really important as well, because you see what artists are doing is always reflecting like what's going on, and but particularly for the Bay Area. So it's an exhibition that I think it was Bay Area Now 5, Ken Foster, the executive director at the time, questioned, should we do this? You know, it only took 5 Bay Area Nows before they're like, do we even need to do this? What's the point?
Yeah.
But one of the questions he had was, does it make sense for an institution that's not a museum? Because biennials and triennials are very much museum
right.
world things, not so much larger, multidisciplinary, but
yeah, because even the Sika show, eventually they accession the work that
right.
that gets put in the Sika show.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, that's every other year? I cannot remember. It's not every year,
I think
is it?
It's like every other
okay.
year. Yeah.
It's like, is it? I've lost track of time.
Yeah. It feels like more an awards show, though, more than yeah. anything, right? Like, than what you guys are
yeah.
doing.
Yeah. Because ours is not an award.
Yeah.
But at some point along the line, I think it was even maybe starting with the second one, it's like, and then we launched the careers of this person, yeah. and there's always like the artist that, you know, Hank Wells Thomas and right. this person, but you know, we try to stay away from that language because that's not what we feel we do. We just, it's,
yeah.
but it is what I think Kinjin found talking to a lot of people is that the Bay Area arts world is smaller than say New York or LA. So it's harder for artists to get, like, they have to leave often to get right. to like a higher level. So this is one of the few things where there's at least more exposure.
Sure.
Yeah, so it's been really interesting to learn more about the history of the exhibition itself yeah. and to see how many people have come through, many artists, how many curators, how many other people.
Well, what one of the things, because I saw the last one, mm-hmm. I remember seeing
oh,
it.
Oh, right, yeah, that's yeah. what I didn't answer.
No, you totally answered. You gave a great background on the show.
More than you needed.
No, I think all of it very important. I think it's very important to know all of what you said, to talk more about the current one.
Yeah.
But also, like, I wanted to mention the last one.
The one was really different.
It was so different.
That was the right? one that I think diverged the most.
Yeah.
But so what they did, for those who weren't here, don't know, is instead of curating artists, they curated organizations. And I started working here right around the time that they started really working on it and had a town hall and met with people. So there were applications and it was arts organizations, nonprofits that were smaller and had a smaller operating budget yeah. basically than we did that were invited to apply. And then I think around maybe 50, I'm trying to remember, 50 groups applied and 15 were selected, and that was through a jury that included both CC Moss and Betty Sue Hurts, the curators at the time, and then a couple of outside people. And so they talked about curating the curators rather than curating the artists. And Betty Sue had, in her interviews with Kinjin, had a really interesting thing that was, it was a critique of the convention. She was saying that it was, you know, kind of this idea that we anoint people, we pick people, and, like, you know, who are we to do that? So let's pick the curators and let them then pick the artists. So it was kind of turning that convention on its head, which I think yeah. is super interesting. And Cece was the one who kind of come up with the idea, thinking of it sort of art fair style format based on something she participated in at Turbine Hall at Tate Modern, and I'm forgetting the name of that program, but it's in the info somewhere. so they were really trying to do something different, and for many, I think between Bay Area Now 2 and 7, it was organization-wide, so the other departments also participated, and you know, they all did sort of kind of opening up the curatorial process to other people for Band 7. So that was a really, really different, and it got mixed reviews, and I think what's so interesting and people reflecting on it now is that I think it was very indicative of the time, because there were so yeah. many little art spaces, people like popping up galleries and spaces in their own homes.
Yeah. Because it was during a time too where places were starting to like yeah. close down. A lot of gallery yeah. spaces, a lot of like smaller gallery spaces in the community were starting to either shut down because they couldn't afford the rent.
Right.
Or because the people were just moving away because they couldn't afford rent.
Because they couldn't, yeah. It always comes back to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think I think it was really brave that they did it that way, and I think smart, and I think it was the right impulse for the time. I think what happened is then it felt less like a cohesive show because it was 15 little things.
Right.
That's not a criticism. It's more just like an observation. So I think that's what people react to because that's so different from how it has been as one big show. But, you know, when you take 15, we're 25 in this one, and you put them all together, it still is, it doesn't always cohere.
Was it like if, I think I called it like 15 pop-up shows.
Yeah.
Which was a popular trend.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think they were right to do it. Yeah. And then it ended up being like, more than 150 artists in the show because there was a couple of larger groups, including the Bay Area Art Workers Alliance, who had, I don't know, like 70 some odd members. So it was a lot of artists. But it meant a lot of people coming through and other organizations. And then, you know, each one did a program if they wanted. So I think it was a super interesting way to do things. And looking back 4 years later, it's like, that's very much where we were at that time. And now it's, I don't know, it's different. It's not like rents are lower.
No.
But it's a slightly different feel. And I think one of the things we got out of the studio visits that we did, which was really great, is, you know, there's this narrative that the arts world is dying here. Everyone's moving away. No one can afford to stay. And there's no big art scene. And we met so many amazing artists. Some made it into the show, some didn't. I mean, there's no one who we saw was like, oh, gosh, that's terrible. Like, everyone was great. You know, we were lucky to have such a great group to pick from. But there were so many people really making good work and making their lives work here in the Bay Area and being really positive about it. And that was such a joy to see.
Yeah.
So I think it's just kind of a different moment that, and that's what we talk about in the curatorial text that, you know, the world is shit.
Yeah.
Can I say that?
Oh, yeah.
The world is shit, but people are finding ways back and they're finding ways to push through and to resist, to be resilient, to make work, to make lives in the Bay Area and other places. And that was really hopeful in a way.
Yeah, and you kind of, that's really the vibe I got when I saw the show this time. Like
because it's like post-apocalyptic, but friendly.
Right, yeah. You know, like I felt, while I walking through the galleries and remembering the vibe the last time, I felt like the last time was very much about what you talked about, and I did feel that. I do. Yeah. I lived through it. I remember seeing it happen. And now seeing this, how it is set up now, it felt like a shot in the arm, which is kind of what I feel like has been happening in the Bay Area art scene the last year and a half or so.
Yeah.
Is that places like the Minnesota Street Project popping up, with the opening and the expansion of SMoMA, the fact that they added a contemporary art department.
Exactly.
I mean, like, what the work that you guys been doing, I mean, you guys done a lot in terms of in the last couple years in terms of being more involved with the community and
being a civic institution.
Yeah, and I think that show is representative of that. Is that for, I feel like in the last 2 years, through many different ways, the Bay Area art scene is getting a shot in the arm.
Yeah,
and there's more stuff happening in Oakland too. And a lot of the artists I know are based in Oakland that are like in the shows.
Yeah, a lot of them are. We didn't. It's funny because in some of the iterations, they've definitely defined the Bay Area, and I think they definitely did in the first one. And we kind of had a map as our logo for the last one in Band 7, and it was like, you know, from Napa, which was DeRosa, all the way to Montalvo in the South Bay. But this time, we didn't really fuss so much with like, what does the Bay Area mean? It was like everyone was just in the Bay Area was recommended. But then I was like, well, actually, two of the artists are kind of no longer in the Bay Area, and that happened in the process. And one of them, Constance Hockaday, she was in Oakland, and then, you know, we invited her to the show, and then, you know, she emailed me a few weeks later and was like, I'm moving to LA. Does this mean I can still be in the show? And I was like, you know, part of being a Bay Area artist or anyone in the arts is that you leave. So that's fine. You were in the Bay Area when we picked you. And so she wasn't here for the opening. She'll be here later. But and then Caleb Duarte was kind of based in Oakland at the time, has taken a teaching job in Fresno. So I'm like, Central Valley. But, you know, that's what it takes to be here. Sometimes not being here is how you are here. And so we weren't worried about that so much, but a lot of them ended up being in Oakland, which is exciting. And some in the city, it just kind of, it was more just like who was recommended to us and when we reached out. And
well, and interestingly enough, isn't that really like indicative of the aftermath of the rent being so high that a lot of galleries and artists got pushed out, is that many of them moved to the East Bay, right, where it was a little cheaper to rent out spaces.
It was.
And until now, right?
Now.
Yeah.
our neighborhood's still probably the same.
Well, so tell me about this show, the current show, a little bit more. Tell me a little bit more about it. And that, when you did all the studio visits, so you mentioned like it was by word of mouth of like mm-hmm. recommendations of who you should look at.
Yeah.
Did you still had to pare it down a little bit by doing more, these studio visits? Like it wasn't like every studio visit you did was every person that's currently in the show. There was a lot more.
There's more studio visits and even more names that we were given. So we started by asking colleagues, and I started compiling this list that like kept getting bigger and bigger. And I was like, what are we gonna do with all these? But then the thing that we did when we started the studio visits is that we asked the artists to give us three names as well.
Yeah.
Which I was like, I hope they, don't mind. Is that weird? But they were really excited to be able to, talk about their friends or people that they admire. So that actually worked out really nicely.
That part is really cool. The fact that you had such a long list from like just asking people.
It was like, I think around 150 people. So obviously with the short timeline of the show, we couldn't visit them all. But we did, when we were doing the selection process, so I don't know, we did like 50, 60 studio visits. When we did the selection process, we went to everyone's website who was recommended and looked at it, and to make sure there wasn't anyone that we, hadn't done a studio visit with that we missed. And there was actually someone we picked out of that and did a studio visit and included him in the show. So we tried to do our due diligence of looking every name that was recommended to us we looked at on some level. And we would have loved to have done studio visits with everyone, but that would have been at least like a year or longer process. It's just really hard. And like I said, everyone on the visual arts side I did a studio visit with, but Lucia, her schedule's insane. So she couldn't go to all of them. And I don't know if she did any of the architecture and design ones, or that was just Martin. I think it was just him and all of them. So it was also splitting the work. And but it was a great process. I'm glad we did the like ask people, because if we just were supposed to figure it out on our own, and we wanted it to be something that involved a lot of the Bay Area arts mm-hmm. community, and people were really generous with their time and suggestions, and we're super grateful for all of that. And thank you to anyone who we asked for recommendations, and I hope I got back to you and said thank you.
So you really did take a lot of, not just like you took the lead on it, but you took a lot of ownership too of this show.
Yeah.
So how did that feel for you? Like, was this like the biggest thing so thus far that you've like put together?
I guess so. I hadn't thought of it that way. I've worked on some really big shows here. Like when we did the Radical Presence show 3 years ago, I was the coordinating curator here, but it was curated by Valerie Cassell Oliver mm-hmm. in Houston. And so it was, that was a ton of work because it was performance art, so we had so many people out, but it wasn't putting the show together in the same way. And with the Tanya Bergara show, that was a ton of work and really big, but, very much Lucia taking the lead. So this is probably, the first really big show I've taken the lead on. It was great. I'm so thankful to all the artists. They're and the architects and designers who I didn't work as closely with, but they're all amazing, and I'm glad I got to know them a little bit. But, I was primarily working with the 19 visual artists in the show, and they're... Just such a joy to work with. I was joking because, we've done all these solo shows for the last few years. And, when Betty Sue was here, you talk about different curatorial visions. She did a lot of really amazing group shows, but we didn't do any solo shows mm-hmm. when she was she did some before I got here. But then once Lucia came in, she was doing much more of these like focused, either collective or solo retrospective surveys. So this is the first big group show we've done in at least 2 years. I think Take This Hammer was the last one. And it was really nice to go back to working on a group show after not having done it for a while. And I joke it's like 25 little egos instead of one big ego. But no, everyone's great that we've worked with. So it's just really different when it's one person. And especially, a lot of the socially engaged work is that they resist looking back on their practice and mm-hmm. because so much of their work is not inside an institution, it's outside. So it's been a really different process with them, and then to come in and work with people who this is much more of what their practice is, and it makes much more sense to have their work in a museum setting, and are really excited about it and excited that there was a budget for them. We pay our artists, and that's not something that always happens. So it was such, like, we were emailing internally within the department being like, we love you after the show opened. And I said that they felt like this was such a joyful installation. It doesn't mean it was easy. It was managing a lot of different people and time. And, there's always setbacks. And there's always the night before the press preview when we're here till super late. And you're so tired. And I hope I made sense of the press preview that morning, because I was like a total mess. But it was joyful. Like, it was just so exciting to work with all of these artists who I've gotten to know over the last several months. And they're all just wonderful people, and they're doing amazing art. So for me, this was such a, like, a tremendously amazing experience, and I feel so lucky to have gotten to do it.
So I'm not going to ask you who was your favorite, because that's like, because you have no. to, you have, because no, you have favorite. To say all of them are your favorites.
All of them right, are my favorites. But you can't pick your favorite kid.
But of the, which part of the show are you, do you feel most proud of? Like, what aspect of, like, putting it together?
I think the way it actually came together and feels like a cohesive show, if I can say that. Hopefully that's not way off base. Like, hopefully you feel the same way. I mean, it was funny. I was talking with one of the artists during the installation, Carrie Hott, who has the installation up here on the second floor with the big table with the little models. And everyone should look really closely at those models, because there's all these little vignettes, including someone who's been fired. There's, like, a little box of stuff. She pointed that out to me, and I was like, oh, my God, that's amazing. That's so good. And she was like, you know, did you... Because what we did is we selected people, said, hey, you're in the show. You'd let us know if you want to be in it. There's no overall theme. And that was something I should mention that was really important to us, to not come in with a theme. Because usually with group shows, it's like, here's the theme, and then you pick people. It was, we picked the people, and then here are the themes that kind of come up from the people that we've picked. And
that was that you kind of putting that together by, like, as you're, like, observing their work and what they're bringing in as you're talking to them, or?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely, when we were doing the selection process, I had all these little notes. I just actually recycled them the other day of, like, all my scraps of paper. That was actually when I was trying to, like, work out the exhibition design, because we all kind of, like, the three of us did it separately and came back together, and it actually worked pretty well. Mm-hmm. But you could just see certain impulses that a lot of the artists have, and it's not like their work looks the same. Like, you could say that a lot of them are thinking about the body, but you look at, like, Rhonda Hulbert and Charlie Lees, who are next to each other in the exhibition. Their work looks completely different. But there are similarities in the way they're thinking. And I think that's what we saw. So when we were doing the selection process, it was really kind of easy to see. It was easy to put it together, relatively speaking, because it was like, these artists all, this will form an exhibition together, even though we're not picking it on themes. You just see how they work together. So then when we selected them, we asked them to give us proposals. So, you know, what I told a couple of them, because they were, you know, we were like, you can show existing work if you want, you can show new work, this is the budget. But we're picking you as an artist, we're not picking specific work. So what do you want to do? And which I think was exciting, but, you know, put them on a very short, it's like a 3-4 month production timeline.
Right.
I wish we could have given them more time, but it worked out well. But that once they, you know, submitted their proposal, you could see it just kind of, like, came together. And then, again, in the exhibition layout, and I think in Gallery 1 in particular, which is the smaller of the large galleries with the wooden floor, and it has Andrew Wilson and Josh Fodd and Marcela Prado Arisa and Sita Bomic and Nikki Green, that one feels almost like a mini exhibition. It coheres really well. Mm-hmm. And they're all, it's interesting because their work is wildly different. There's textiles, there's sculpture, there's photography, there's more textiles and more photography, but installation-based and really different practices. But they're all kind of thinking about histories and using archives and using those things to think about what's happening right now in the world and in their lives, and creating kinship across time in a number of them. And I think that was just really interesting to see it come together. And part of how we put them in that room is that there's a lot of light-sensitive work in that room. So they kind of needed to be there. Marcella, her proposal was site-specific. So, Josh wanted to be in there for textiles, and Marcella wanted to be there for the site-specific. But their work speaks to each other so well. So we were kind of lucky in that it was almost easy in that way. And, I think Gallery 2, the bigger gallery, It just the way that the gallery is, it's bigger, it doesn't necessarily feel like one little mini show, but the works, I think there's a really interesting way that you flow through different kinds of power dynamics, and again, thinking of the body and all those different things. And then upstairs, it's, you know, kind of like a couple more little vignettes. So what I was starting to say at the beginning of this, Carrie, was like, how did everybody fit together so well? Like, did you ask people? Because I was like, no, it's the same thing I told you, the proposals, and we were able to just put it together because people are just, there's something in the air, and people are thinking along the same lines, even if their work looks really different. And I just, like, again, we're so lucky that it worked out really well.
And yeah.
That's the thing I would be most proud of. Not an individual artist, the group as a whole. Like, as we were talking.
Even the curatorial end of it, it was a group, right? Because
yeah,
it was not just a group project. It was also like Martin has.
It was very much all three of us.
And Lucia has some input, right?
Oh, yeah. No, it was very much all three of us working together and, you know, running decisions by each other and, you know, bouncing ideas off of each other and doing different things. So it was great that no one person had to shoulder all the responsibility, but that we also, particularly for Martin and me, who are more junior, to be able to run with things in a way. And Lucia, she was saying at the opening, she's like, I never let go of things this way. Like, I've never been able to, like, trust people like you guys. Yes, we did it.
Which I think speaks a lot for the environment, the working environment you have here at the YBCA. Right?
Yeah.
Like, you guys really are a collaborative team here.
Yeah. And we, you know, I'm really grateful to be able to work with these people and have worked with them for 5 years now, and it's, you know, sometimes we bicker like siblings, but overall, I think, I remember once a couple years ago, I just watched like a funny interaction between John and Tesser, and I thought to myself, it was like, you know what, I will never work with people like this again. I will never have this like little community of amazing people who work so well together, and I'm very cognizant of that and so grateful for it.
So now I'm going to ask you what I like to ask my guests, and Ed, now that you've mentioned that, you're an associate curator here now. You helped put on one of the biggest shows right here. Future-wise, if like 5, 8, 10 years from now, like, do you envision yourself still working at a place, either, you know, here, if it's here, it's here, but like, you know, let me know. But if not, at a place that's similar to the YBCA, you know, but like one day running it, or like, you know what I'm saying? Like, thinking long term, like now that you've like spent a lot more time now curating more shows and contemporary work on top of that, and stuff that's like more civically involved, is that the trajectory that you like to continue on? Is working with these types of shows even in the future, no matter where you're at, whether it's here or somewhere else?
Remember what I said earlier about not being able to like know what I want?
and you don't have, and it's okay if you don't know the answer to that.
I mean, I think I know parts. It's interesting, having worked at the Asian Art Museum before this, worked at SF MoMA, but like hearing you talk about it, I think about going back to a more traditional institution, and I'm like, I don't know if I could do that. I'm sure I could, but there are struggles and freedoms both in working in a smaller, I mean, we're not that small an organization, but our department is small, that we always talk about we have to be more nimble, and that's how we can respond to things. And there are great things about that, and there's also the fact that just we're constantly exhausted because you're always on the go, like what I said about, you know, you open one exhibition, you're behind on the next. So there's rarely a moment to kind of sit back and reflect. But I do like being in the slightly smaller, like, organization, I think, where you can do a lot more, and there's different, not do more, I mean, do things slightly differently. Like, what's interesting about the Suzanne Lacy show is that there's what I'm saying, that YBCA is doing the socially engaged part of it, and SF MoMA is doing the more traditional. And one of the SF MoMA curators, Dominic, had said it like a year ago that like SF MoMA couldn't do the socially engaged because it's just not what they do, and that's what we do, and that's what we've been doing. So the fact that we are able to do these slightly less traditional, more out of the box things is really great, and I really like that. So whether it's here or another maybe smaller organization where you get to do a lot more, I don't think I want to run an organization. That sounds terrible. Like, I don't want to do all that. But I wonder, like, what I see myself doing in 5 to 10 years. I mean, I'd like to stay in the curatorial path, and I really like being contemporary art. But, you know, maybe there are other, like, things that I haven't thought of that could come up. I mean, I think...
Because we talk about people like Martin, who was on the production side at one point, and now he's like in a public program job now.
Yeah, and sometimes those shifts are like not what you were expecting necessarily, but I think, you know, he does that for a couple of years, and then where can he go from there? He has a really, really interesting resume of like a lot of different experiences. So, you know, I just try to collect the experiences and see. But I mean... My family's here, so I feel very tied to the Bay Area, but, you know, there's a part of me that's like, when can I move really far away again? Like, you know, one of my best friends moved to Europe, to Edinburgh last year, and I'm visiting her in 2 weeks. And I'm like, well, can I do that? Can I just pick up and move somewhere? This country is like, but then, you know, every country is getting terrible. But, you know, the idea of leaving the Bay Area is terrifying because you can basically never move back unless you hit the lottery. Because And I have a unique living situation in that I'm the building manager of my apartment building.
I didn't know that, by the way.
Yes, my other side. I'm like, sometimes my coworkers will hear me screaming at like a contractor, like, "What are you doing?" They did the windows wrong. That fell in my lap 2.5 years ago. So it's you know how you make a living in the arts in the Bay Area is sometimes you take on creative second jobs that are totally like. Some of the things I've learned, like I was like emailing, doing an invoice today about something, I'm like, and the backflow on the boiler. And I was like, what? 2 years ago, I wouldn't have known what that meant, but I know now. But it's made it so it's more livable for me on a nonprofit salary. But like leaving is scary because you can't come back. So then it's like, okay, there is only so many arts organizations here. What does that mean for the future? And, you know, I think YBCA is a really interesting place to be, and it has changed a lot even in the 5 years I've been here. And I think, you know, I like that it's an organization that's run by a woman, and I like that there's a number of them in this area. But that to me is something I think about.
And under her leadership, you guys have done some really cool stuff.
Yeah,
like a lot of really cool stuff. Even the you guys have like
there's a fellows meeting happening right there in the next room.
and there's even that billboard that set up right outside that has a message.
The climate change, Andrea Bowers, climate change is real.
I mean, if that the fact that an institution is just right in everybody's faces, like saying we're going to have an
opinion. The Tanya Bergara billboard, not that one.
I mean, that's great. Like, I don't think enough institutions do that. I don't think it should that type of thing or action should be limited to just small places like the YBCA.
Right.
But you guys are really taking on that role, and it's really cool. I mean, it's been really awesome.
Oh, that's so nice to hear. Because sometimes you're inside the institution, literally and figuratively. You don't know, like, hello, is anyone out there? what we're doing? Yeah. But that came out of the Tanya Bergara exhibition. The we call it the marquee, the big orange wall where we put up messages, and I think people have really responded to having. And again, that's what I was saying earlier, that we can respond in real time to things with this kind of platform. And you can't put that up on the side of Snohetta's beautiful building or
over there. Like, it's a MoMA, which is right across the street from you guys, right?
Yeah. But we're able to do things like that, or use what we call the wavy wall, which is right across from the restaurant, where one of the installations for Band Aid is that it's also about climate change. It's looking at migratory ranges of birds, and it's this mural, vinyl mural on that wall that goes like this, that waves. And it's really cool that we can do stuff like that too.
Yeah.
We put up our messages everywhere, out and about, in people's faces.
Well, cool. Well, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is fun to talk about this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, and it goes quick, too, right? Once you get going. Well, an hour has gone by already.
Doesn't feel like it.
But, so before I let you go, we'll plug Band 8 again. Yeah. So it's open till when?
It's open through March 24th. So it's open for a while, but I think it bears repeat viewing. So come in, come back again. The first Tuesday of the month is free. Third Thursdays from 5 to 8 are free, but we're also one of the cheaper games in town, so.
It's true. Yeah, and there's good stuff in here.
There's lots of good stuff. Yeah. It's the whole institution, so upstairs, downstairs, art everywhere.
Yeah. And then what's next?
After that is the Suzanne Lacy exhibition here and SF MoMA.
When does that one open?
That opens April 20th, 2019.
Okay, so that's coming up quickly too, I guess, right?
It's not so far away.
No.
Yeah,
all right. Well, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot for listening, and thanks again to Susie for coming on. If you want to learn more about Bay Area Now 8 or other programming at the YBCA, visit ybca.org. You can also follow them on Instagram or Twitter at YBCA. If you haven't already, you can also subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts or whichever platform you use to listen to podcasts, or you can visit the website at artteampc.org. You can also follow the podcast on Instagram at artteampc. All right, till next time, everyone.